On a Thursday, you're with us on the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We're talking about safety net programs and new research and how people feel about having to make a payment to receive a specific welfare benefit. So like a co-payment at a doctor's office or pay a dollar to receive food stamps. This research looks at how Americans feel about whether people living in poverty should have to chip in or do work in exchange for aid. Do you depend on social programs right now? Is it through your local or state government, perhaps a church or charity? What qualifications are you required to meet to receive benefits? Join in the discussion, 800-642-1234. Anya Somick is an economics professor at the University of Southern California. Her study examines how Americans feel about taxpayer contributions and requirements for welfare benefits. Anya, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Hi, nice to be here.
So you're a behavioral economist. What did you set out to learn when you put this project together?
Well, there's a big debate in behavioral economics about how recipients of aid are using that aid and when it comes to contribution requirements, but we were really interested in understanding how the American people feel more generally about whether these requirements should be part of aid programs, and that hadn't been something people had looked at. So we used a large representative panel of Americans that's hosted here at the University of Southern California, and we asked them a few questions about that.
Yeah, so before we get to find out how they felt, how was the study conducted, and what were you able to gather from participants as you asked some of these questions?
So what we were really interested in doing is putting people in the shoe of the policymaker and trying to see whether they would contribute toward a program in which recipient contribution requirements were or were not required. And so we put people into different groups, and different groups received different messages about what type of food aid program we were providing. And it was a program that we actually then implement here in Los Angeles. And in some of the groups, we told them that this healthy food aid program is valued at $10, but people can receive it for free. And in other groups, we said it's the same program, but this time the recipients must contribute a dollar or about 10% of the cost of the program. And we had another treatment or another group that said it's a $5 contribution relative to $10. And we did something similar for time contribution. So we said either this program takes no time at all. You just come in to the grocery store, you pick up your free bag of healthy food groceries, or you must wait 5 minutes to do a registration process, or you must wait 25 minutes to do a registration process. And what we were trying to see is whether people recognize the trade-off that economists recognize about these food aid programs or aid programs in general, which is that it's very hard when you offer a program for free to target those who most value the program. So anyone might come up and take the food aid and maybe not value it or not use it. On the other hand, if you make a contribution requirement, like it must cost a dollar, fewer people will take it up. So more people who value it will take it up, but you might be screening out those people who really need it. So there'll be people who can't afford it or who can't spend the time.
And screening out is certainly a concern, because then suddenly you are not meeting the whole mission of the aid program itself.
Exactly.
So what did you find from the people who were going through this process? What did they feel and what did they support?
So we actually find something that's well in line with what economists would expect would happen, which was that people recognize that trade-off. And so we had the most support for the program in which there was a little bit of contribution requirement, but we had the least support for programs in which people had to contribute a lot. So in a follow-up survey, we see that for this 25-minute registration process program, only 8% of people say they like it. Only 12% of people like this $5 cost program, but about a third preferred a free program, and a third each preferred a $1 cost or 5-minute registration program. So people recognize that these programs that have a small contribution requirement do help us identify those who are most in need. They also recognize that higher contribution requirements are a problem because they crowd out the ability of those people most in need to have access to those programs.
You know, when I was, reading and looking at your study, it just reminded me so much of the work of Habitat for Humanity, which has a long tradition, a long history of involving the family who will live in that home, that they have to help build that home. And that's certainly the whole, ethic that Habitat has really worked to push forward through the years. I'm wondering, does it matter how large the benefit is or how substantial a change it will make on a particular person or family as they move forward in life?
So certainly Habitat for Humanity is one program that we also thought about as we were doing this. And I think our thought of doing this study was to really understand how those programs survive and why we have programs like Habitat for Humanity that require aid, but we have other programs that also provide housing that don't require contribution requirements. And we see that there's some Americans who support one and some who support the other, and they showed that through their donations as well in the study. So this study can tell us why we do see those different types of charities out there because there's support for those. I think in terms of your second question about the level of aid, that's not something we looked at in the study, but I imagine that's definitely important, that if you're thinking about something that is of a higher value, then perhaps the entire scale gets shifted a little bit. But that's not something that we looked at, and it's also unclear what we might find.
Talking with University of Southern California economics professor Anya Samick. Let's go to the phones now with David in Milwaukee with thoughts on this. Hi, David.
Good morning. This is a really great topic. I just wanted to say that I am disabled and I do rely on several sources of aid. That's anecdote, but that's what I argue. And I wanted to say that with regard to any charge one makes for a charitable a handout, that disproportionately affects women and people of color because they make less statistically than anyone else. So that any charge you make is inherently racist and misogynistic. And I have fibromyalgia, which led to obesity, and it's very hard for me to move around or do anything. And if I, in the foods that I want to eat or that I need to eat, that shouldn't be dictated, or the things I need shouldn't cost anything. I should get it. I shouldn't have to pay anything for them. And I should be able to eat what I want. And I'll take your response off.
Thank you, David. And Anya, we're coming here up on a break, but he's saying disproportionately affecting women and people of color.
So what I didn't talk about earlier is that there is also a lot of research on how this affects recipients. And I think it's right that even very small contribution requirements have been shown to cause big issues in people accessing programs like Medicaid and so on. And I think that's an important point to consider.
Join in the conversation, 800-642-1234. Have you used welfare benefits in the past? What was that experience like? Were there requirements you had to meet? Were there programs with qualifications that were out of reach for you? Join in at 800-642-1234. Anya Samick stays with us from the University of Southern California, where she is an economist. We'll be back with this conversation in just a minute here on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. And the question is, should low-income people do something or pay something to get benefits from an assistance program like, say, a food pantry? And that was the underlying question, one of them, in a study that looked at so-called contribution requirements. Turns out Americans don't agree on how safety net programs should work, how they should dispense their aid. Do you currently depend on social programs? Is it through local or state government, perhaps a church or a charity? What qualifications do you have to meet? Be part of this discussion. 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. University of Southern California economics professor Anya Samick stays with us, and her study is in the Journal of Public Economics. Anya, many policymakers around the country are adjusting or implementing requirements for SNAP benefits, the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program. What would you suggest lawmakers take from your research and really talk about as they look at requirements around SNAP?
I think it's really important to consider the views of the American public when making those types of decisions. And the biggest takeaway from my research, I would say, is that programs that people feel impose a too great of a cost on recipients are not programs that Americans tend to value. And the debate in our study seems to be between offering a program for free or imposing a very nominal cost. In our case, it was a dollar. On the other hand, this is from other research in economics showing that even very small requirements do make it very difficult for people who most need the aid that don't have the funds to pay those requirements to receive them. So I think there's both sides of the issue. There's what do Americans support, and also how does this affect recipients?
When we look inward here in Wisconsin, Wisconsin lawmakers voted last December to implement work requirements for able-bodied childless adults under 50 who are insured through the state's Medicaid program. What does the research show about occupation-related requirements for welfare?
So in our study, it seemed like there was more opposition to requirements that were monetary than to requirements that were work-based. And I think that's because of this idea that people who are most in need have a more difficult time meeting monetary requirements than they do meeting time requirements or work requirements.
So this research has shown that a small requirement will ensure the recipient is more likely to use a benefit. And we're talking about this fine line between that. A lot of the research on the recipient side of this welfare equation comes from developing countries. Why is that?
Right. So in developing countries, we spend a lot of time thinking about how to distribute aid, and there's aid is distributed widely in the form of mosquito nets or anti-diarrhea tablets. And their researchers have done large-scale field studies in which they go out and some groups receive these for free and some groups have to pay a nominal cost. And there the research seems to be concluding that offering the programs for free is probably better because the cost of excluding people who can't afford it is much larger than the cost of including some people who might receive it and not use it or not value it.
In your research, you studied food aid. Do you know how Americans feel when the safety net program is related to health care? Do we have any research out there?
I don't think so. So in our case, this was just a first study trying to look at surveying people about this question with respect to food aid, just because I think it's easier to ask people a question about a specific topic, and this is the one we chose. So future work should definitely look at those types of questions.
And can you infer here, can you extrapolate this information you learned about charitable giving and welfare benefits, how people might feel about the amount of tax dollars they'd be willing to contribute to a social program?
Well, in our study, we had people contribute some of the money that they earned as part of participating in the survey, and we saw a large proportion of people contributing. So people contributed about a third of their earnings from the survey. I think that's very different from what you could think about for taxes, but it does show that people are interested in helping those who are less advantaged to receive aid.
And when an organization, a charity, a local government, state government would put a work requirement or a particular dollar amount, a $1 for a food pantry, does that add up? Does that impact them economically in terms of the organization itself? Does the organization need that aid in order to do what it does?
I think in the case of these very small contribution requirements, I suspect that they add more to the administrative cost of running the program than they might actually help with the cost of running the program.
And do you know why is that?
So that is my speculation. I think it's just if you're going to start collecting a dollar from everyone, and then you need someone to keep track of who's paid a dollar and who hasn't, and then you need someone to take all that money and put it away and have an accountant to manage it, I just feel like these very small requirements seem like they're more to appease people who might think that those requirements are necessary than they might actually be toward helping out. And that's the some of the types of requirements that have been instituted as well is people talk about time requirements from the perspective of we want to have a registration process for a program that's relatively long to try to help target just those people who really need it, who are willing to go through that process. And in those cases, we call that a dead weight loss, essentially in econ terms, something that's not useful at all. So I think I would be doubtful that these requirements help in a significant way toward the operating costs, especially when they're very low. And the very low requirements are the ones that I think are most supported in our study.
Let's go to Marie in Edgerton. Hi, Marie.
Hello. Can you hear me?
I can, yes. Go ahead.
Okay, I'll take my question off air. I noticed that the biggest pushback are the people that have not had a catastrophic event in their life or their family. And so until they understand that the people that are going through these social, economic, or having to go and request assistance because they're not being able to either feed their family or somebody lost their job or somebody like disability, how do you educate these people with empathy that, you know, they may not, the people that are giving their tax money may not have the ability to have that empathy to understand that maybe somebody was having a good economic status and things were going great until something catastrophic happened and now they're having to go and ask for help. I'll take my...
Marie, thank you so much for the call and the psychological impact there and the empathy impact. Anya?
I think that's a very important point, that there is an empathy component to deciding how you would like aid distributed. And my hope in humanity is that we do have a lot of empathy. One aspect of the study that I didn't mention earlier is in the charity contribution part of the study, where we had people choose whether to contribute to the program that cost a dollar or $5, we then also asked people, after we see someone's willing to pay a dollar, would you be willing to refund them? So it's this idea that I'm showing that I can pay a dollar because I really do value this product, but really I can't afford it. And we saw that 80% of our respondents were willing to refund the money to the recipient. So the idea is that some of the reason why people support these dollar or very small contribution requirement programs is they just really have a hard time figuring out who they think would value the aid. But once they see someone has shown that they're willing to contribute, then they're willing to refund. So that's a highlight or positive aspect of our study when it comes to this question of empathy.
Anya, where does research like this go from here? What are you looking at next?
Well, I think the next question really is one that you brought up earlier, which is to try to understand how this scales. So trying to see what people feel about programs that are more consequential, like Medicaid, and looking to see how people feel about programs that are more that are different from food aid. So that would be a way to validate the results of this study and to perhaps better understand the nuances of perceptions of these types of programs.
Anya, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Anya Samick is a professor of economics at the University of Southern California. Up next, it's news. Then we'll learn what makes an award-winning button collection. What questions do you have about collecting buttons? Are you a collector yourself? How did you get started? And what kind of buttons are your favorites? Call in at 800-642-1234. We'll meet up with the Wisconsin State Button Society after this news update right here on the Ideas Network.